we have been told that we're stupid, we're not gonna learn, we're slow, you're just gonna end up like your father, friends out there locked up, from the teachers, from the parents. But at the end of the day, we are just kids trying to figure out who are we.
You're listening to Second Stories, created and produced by Second Story, with me, Abigail Brocker, as your host. Second Story is a nonprofit based in Northern Virginia, working to provide safe havens and opportunities to grow and thrive to youth in crisis and their families. We help at-risk and homeless youth step away from their first story, one often marked by abuse, hardship, and crisis, and write their own second story, full of hope and promise. Second Stories is the home for more stories like these from people in our community. Our story today is about a man named Chauncey Yargo, but we're talking to two people, both Chauncey and his brother, Manny. When I asked Manny and Chauncey if they would speak with me for this podcast, Manny was insistent on something. He would be a part of it, but it needed to be focused on his brother Chauncey, so that's what we did. Chauncey is now a very successful chef with his own restaurant in California, and much of his story is about the pursuit of that dream. You'll soon find, though, that this story is really about the both of them. Though Chauncey is the focus and the one to do most of the talking as Manny had wanted, Manny's presence is deeply felt throughout this whole story, and his influence is here in the recording, too. This story is very much about the people who help us along the way, about how each of us are like a tapestry, made up of choices and people and experiences, and how much we owe to each of those elements. Today we get the opportunity to hear the story of one person and then get even deeper to inspect one of those very important threads that makes this person who they are. I'm so glad we get to explore it together. Hi, Manny and Chauncey, how are you guys?
Good.
Pretty good.
Thanks so much for being here and doing this.
You're welcome.
Manny is joining us from his home, and Chauncey is in San Francisco. So we're all having a conversation over the phone. Manny is in this area, but we're in different locations. And I know Manny a lot better than I know the majority of interviewees on the podcast because he's a fellow staff member at Second Story, the organization who puts on this podcast. Chauncey also has ties to Second Story, which we'll hear more about later, but Manny and Chauncey are brothers, and it means that their stories are sort of intertwined. Manny, how about you start off by introducing yourself?
Oh, hi. My name is Emmanuel Yargo, and a.k.a. Manny Yargo, as he's been saying, Manny. I'm a technology educator with yours truly, Second Story. I've been working with kids well over a decade, and particularly with Second Story organization for 5 years, a little 5 years plus. I've served as a technology educator previously with Fairfax County Office of Partnerships, Neighborhood and Community Services Counselor, Youth Counselor, Mental Health Counselor, which is also currently too, and as a former law enforcement officer. I'm glad to be with you today to talk with one of our former students who happens to be my brother. And also along the way, I will touch base on other involvement and experiences in the Fairfax County area. So thank you. So without any further ado, I'd like to introduce you guys to my brother, Chauncey Yargo.
How you guys doing? Thank you a lot, Emmanuel, for introducing me.
Chauncey, tell me about what growing up looked like for you.
Growing up in Liberia, from my father's side, I have 7 brothers and 8 sisters. And then from my mother's side is 3 of us. So I grew up with my mom a lot more. She was kind of like Like back home, it's like the kid have to like do a lot of stuff around the house, like, you know, like clean up, cook, go shopping at like a very young age. So that's one of those things that I grew up with my mom, always constantly letting me cook around the house and just taking care of my brothers and sisters. And it was a lot of responsibility at a young age, and grew up fast. That happened really fast for me. I never really understood that. Why was I put in this situation to be doing stuff like that?
Do you feel like you were like kind of bitter about it?
Yes, I kind of felt a certain way about that.
Was it that way for your peers too, or just for you?
It was mostly for me. My father was actually traveling a lot, so my mom felt like she needed a lot more help. So, and that's the reason why, you know, she actually put me in that situation.
So it's almost like you were sort of forced into that second parent role when you were really young.
Definitely. Huh.
And you ended up moving here. How old were you when you came here?
When I came to the States, I was 13. My country had a war, so we had to leave Liberia and go to the country next door called Ivory Coast. And that's where I connected with my dad and with the rest of my siblings from my dad's side. So I connected with them there. And then we all left the Ivory Coast together and came to the States.
What was that like? I mean, moving from a place that was so different to the U.S. across the world, were you excited? Were you nervous?
I just wanted to get away from just going hungry, like days without eating sometimes. I just wanted this different life with not having gun sounds. And if you're going to make it like the next day or today, if you know, it was just so much going through my mind, you know.
Do you feel like you lived with that constant fear and constant hunger and poverty? It sounds like life was really intense in Liberia.
For a kid, yes. Like, it's so much happening, and to the point, like, sometimes you will have, like, flashbacks. Like I have flashbacks now, mm-hmm. just thinking about the experience I had to go through. And I don't think any kid should actually go through stuff like that, because that interfered in just living life itself.
Right. So you had really high expectations of life here.
Yes, definitely.
Did it live up to those expectations, or what was it like when you moved here?
My father came ahead of us. He moved to Virginia. He got settled in. And then that's when we actually came to him. So he already had a place for us, everything, and then we just came, you know, and settled in with him. One of the things that was very confusing for me was I was still trying to find myself and just figure myself out, because I was so confused, you know. A kid that just left a war-torn country, moved to another country, and then moved to another country. It was very hard for me to just find myself and my identity and my voice. You know, who am I?
You're 13 years old. That's like the most tender age for all of these things to be happening to you.
Definitely. Once I got here, I started school like a few weeks later. And I was still confused. So, I mean, a situation like that, you can't really expect
for like a child, and just start and just function right away in school. That takes time. I gotta get used to it. I gotta find my voice. I gotta figure out who am I? What am I doing here? Do I belong here? You know, so in the process of that, the teachers and the principal at the school already made a decision on where to put me at. And they never really like talk to me one-on-one, figure me out, you know, just get to know me. Mm-hmm. They didn't do that. They just automatically put me in like a ESL class and like, well, you're going to be here for the next few more years. And yeah, and that was it.
So that was hard. What was your home life like? Like, what was the place like where you were living? How was your relationship with your dad?
My dad he was a cool guy to be around, but I came around in his life when he was already older, so that experience with just having fun with like your parents, it was there, but it wasn't the same, you know. Like, I mean, I can't go to like the movie with him. I can't go to like the park with him, you know. So like, it was just like all like direct script business, you know. So it was like, you gotta come home, you gotta do your homework. Music have to be low. You can't have the music loud. If you cook, you can't use a lot of salt. You can't use a lot of oil. You know, it was just like right to the point, you know. If you like tell jokes, you know, he laugh at it, but it like he laughs and he stops, you know. It's like, it's nothing more like, oh son, that was a funny joke, you know, like it wasn't like that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It was just so straightforward.
Right. So there wasn't like a super safe space at home for you to just kind of cut loose and be yourself and explore who you were.
Nope.
So what would you say were your greatest challenges in those early years of living in the U.S.?
I really had to know the truth about myself. Just having time for myself, because you gotta realize that all throughout my life, it was always about somebody else. My mom, it was about her. My siblings. My dad, it was about school.
You didn't have like the time or space to just be a kid.
Yeah.
But you were so passionate about cooking. How did that enter the picture?
I didn't know if I had a passion for it. I just had to cook and to like survive. So it's one of those things, like, I know I have to eat, so I don't have a choice. And I want to cook. When I came into the U.S., I was like, why they don't have a lot of guys over here cooking? Why is it's a lot of females cooking all the time? So, and then I kept hearing half of my friends then say, oh, I'm going to marry the woman that knows how to cook, or I'm going to be a lawyer, I'm going to be a doctor, so my wife, she's going to do the cooking. I was like, so you want to tell me that you're going to stay home all day hungry and wait for your wife to come home and cook for you? That's the only reason why you're going to marry her? And I saw the problem. It was a lot of stuff wrong with that. I saw a lot of red flags in that. So I was like, I'm going to have to learn how to feed myself because of like my past, like experience, where I came from. I shouldn't be like waiting for nobody and like do anything for me, you know, because I've been doing it for a very long time as a kid.
It sounds like it was like a survival skill and it somehow turned into a passion.
Definitely. It's exactly what happened.
Interesting. So tell me a little bit more about some of the things at that time growing up in Northern Virginia that helped you, that made you feel like you could be a kid, that made you feel like you had the space to discover who you wanted to be and what your passions were?
That's a great question. When I was in school, middle school, I met this lady. Her name was Nancy Oliver. I still remember her name. And she was the nicest, kindest lady ever. She had a son, but he was about like 10 years older. So she was at home by herself, and she was a mentor at the school that I attended. And she asked me if I could be her mentee. I mean, you know, I didn't even know what that means anyway. But, you know, since she was so nice, I just said yes. But in the process of that, you know, she really, like, opened up to me. And I was comfortable enough and just let her know a lot more about me. And she was the one that really, like, brought that kid side out of me for me to really figure out who I was because of her, you know?
How did she do that for you? What made you feel like you were safe around her?
After school, during the weekend, she would come over at my house, pick me up. We would go to McDonald's, go to the park, you know, like I never really like experienced this, like, and this, like this freeness, you know? And once my birthday comes around, she would like bring me gifts. I mean, I never had gifts for my birthday. I never even had a birthday cake growing up. And the first cake I had was from her, you know, like how amazing that was, you know? And she really like made me see another side of what I could be. But after that, during the weekdays now, I still need another second project to be doing after school. Mm-hmm. And I met a couple of friends at school, and they live around me too. And they were like, hey man, they have this place. It's like a underground basement. They got games, they got free food you can eat. And for your birthday, they give you presents. You know, like I am in. So after school, we all met up and we went up there. And when you walk in, it was like paradise. They had video games. They had like kitchen to cook at. I was like, how come nobody told me about this a long time ago? It was like that joyful experience that I never had, you know? Yeah. And I was just soaking every moment of it every time.
Yeah. What did the teen center fill in your life? What do you think was missing that the teen center filled in that gap?
You're in high school, but before you get transferred from high school to like college, it's kind of like the teen center. The teen center prepares you for what may come once you step out of that door. You know, what you're going to be expecting, like the hard challenges that may come in your life, like how to say no to drugs, like, you know, just all the stuff that is like a life situation that the school don't really help you with, but the teen center took on that responsibility to try to help you one-on-one, like a parent, like a guardian would do to somebody that like they really cares about. Especially me being another kid from like another country, I mean, I could have easily like get involved in a lot of stuff that wasn't good just to be cool. So the teen center helped me be like, hey, this is a privilege for you to be here, but you gotta realize that, you know? Mm-hmm. And we here to help you, guide you, to make sure you don't fall into the wrong trap. Right. And that right there was amazing about them.
It's cool to hear someone say something like that, because working on the back end, you just don't get to hear it as much, but it's encouraging.
Yeah, I can relate to everything he's saying, because it goes on currently. Yeah. So his story, is being led through another kid now, you know, kids that I meet are coming with the same experiences.
Right. So Chauncey, I'm trying to think about the transition from you feeling like it wasn't really okay for you as a boy to cook to now being this super good chef. What made you decide that you could pursue this, to believe in yourself enough to decide that this was a feasible career path for you? What changed?
What really changed is like some reason, like every time when I step into the kitchen, it don't matter anywhere, is I relive my child experience with my mom and my grandma. Like, I see them next to me every time. And I do anything for that moment. And that's one of the reasons why, like, I'm always in the kitchen, because of that experience with them. How she laughed, how she hold a spoon, like, you know, what she would say to me. And I haven't seen my mom in about 22 years. Haven't seen her and my girl very long. So I always ask myself, if I haven't seen her, how can I enjoy the best of the memories that I have with her? And it's through cooking. Because it made me happy. I felt good about myself. You know, you cannot put price on that. You cannot put, like, you know, I cannot have a paycheck on that. I mean, just that alone, I feel good every day. It draw me closer to my mom and my grandma every time I'm in the kitchen. But that's my secret. A lot of people don't really know that.
I know that's something that you learned from Manny, too. Manny is a passionate guy, and he really inspired you to chase your dreams. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Manny, oh man, this guy, he's like the coolest, dopest brother. I mean, he was like the young, older brother, but also like the young dad that I never really get to experience in my dad. So I experienced all that fun stuff with him. Like, I mean, he actually took me golfing. He took me out barbecuing. Manny stepped up, and he actually took that responsibility on.
Yeah, thank you, brother.
It's true. So, you know, that's how I always felt. I always felt that way, you know.
Manny, why was it so important to you to be that person for Chauncey?
I think, like he mentioned, I mean, I don't think I'm immune to some of those treatments, too. I think I've had my experiences early on, too. I remember but some of the last communications I had with him before he went out to culinary school was to pursue his passion, like you said. Yeah. To seek his passion. Because I myself, you know, struggle with that, trying to pursue my passions. You know, I see how hard it is. So, that's all right.
And Chauncey, that's been very fruitful for you. Obviously, you're an amazing chef. You have your own restaurant. You've gotten a decent amount of recognition. Can you just like name drop for a second? Like tell us some of the people you've cooked for, because I know there are some really amazing people, some of the things that you've done. I don't know. I want to give you permission to brag on that for a second, because it is really impressive.
Yeah. Cook for Prince, rest in peace. I cook for him. And our former president, that not this one, but you know, Barack Obama, I had a chance to cook for him too, and just other people like Janet Jackson and Bruno Mars and people like that. But you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's one of those things that, if you have a passion for whatever you do, and you just stick to like your craft. I mean, like, people out there watching, people out there noticing you, and you know, it will be a lot more blessings that are gonna come your way. If you stop what you're doing, you're like, oh, I'm just gonna come back to it next week. And then a month goes by, and then 2 years go by, then you know, you're not doing it no more. So you just gotta just keep doing what you're doing. And that's how I did it. And all these blessings came along with it.
That's amazing. Tell us both, I mean, both of you touched on where you're at now. Chauncey, of course, you have a restaurant. Manny, you're doing, I believe that the work that you're doing now at Second Story and in counseling is related to some of these experiences in your family. What motivates you to do the work that you do?
When I chose to work in this field, I always tell the kids to follow their heart and go with what they really think that they really like to do. I too actually have a deep passion, and I never pursued it somehow. Well, not directly. I went to college and followed that route. I'm an avid fan of music, and I wanted to make sure to pursue music. But music, you know, to pursue that, it's like, you know, something that people will deter you from doing. I want you to stay away from that. It's something that I still do now. I create music, and it's just a side habit.
I don't think anyone can measure how many kids you've inspired. Obviously, Chauncey, we've just heard that from him, but in the 5 years you've worked at Second Story.
It's funny we had this interview Tuesday. Two students from my past came with a unique story, and I mean, to add to this, it's like they never forget the past. Just like Chauncey said, and I heard him deeply, the passion that he alluded to for the program. These kids have the passion for them to come back, especially when they find one that worked for them or somebody they can relate to. They come back. So this is not the first time that I've seen these two particular students come back to me. These are high school students now. This one individual I work with is in the 11th grade now. He came by last year, and then he came back now. Touched base with me and told me stuff like there are things that he wanted to confide in me and he wanted to talk to me about that he was not comfortable talking with anybody else, because when he talked with them, they shut him off. He told me this on Tuesday. And, you know, I just felt the connection to this podcast right away.
Wow, guys. Something I remember that Chauncey, you said to me before, was that you feel like once people believed in you, you could believe in yourself. And that just feels like the thing that stood out this whole time as we've been talking. People believed in you. You believed in yourself. You're doing incredible things. Manny, you're doing amazing things too, not only every day at Second Story, but by believing in other people.
I just want to tell you guys, thank you for the job that you guys continue and to ask you to do over there, you know, because the sky is a limit for a lot of kids out there, and they definitely need encouragement from you guys every day, day in, day out. We have been told that we're stupid, we're not gonna learn, we're slow, you're just gonna end up like your father or like our friends out there locked up. You know, it's so much stuff that gets thrown at us every day from the teachers, from the parents, from strangers out there that just automatically sees us and just label us as we the criminals, we the victim. Mm-hmm. But the end of the day, we are just kids trying to figure out who are we?
Yes.
You know, how can we be better than yesterday? And you guys, the program that you guys have, you know, without that program, there will be a lot of disappointments out there. So just keep on doing what you guys are doing. I have fun with those podcasts.
It was a pleasure to do this podcast too. I want to add that, you know, I do believe that it takes a village. I didn't start that saying. First time I heard it was from Miss Hillary Clinton. But I can see how it matters. It takes a village. We heard the story of my brother. Hear the story about me too, through my brother. Same story. Didn't have to allude to my life as far as it goes, but I can relate. You know, somehow, like he stated, what he didn't get from his home, he was able to reach out and get it from the outside world through his mentor. So I know it takes a village. And so for this podcast, I made a song, actually, and the title is A Village. So please look out for it at the end of this podcast.
Yes, please. Finish till the end. Yeah, finish till the end, because the song is going to play after the interview. And we're super excited that Manny is sharing this song for this podcast. It's awesome. Can't taste Chauncey's food, but we can listen to Manny's music. So we get half of it, I guess. Chauncey and Manny, thank you so much for doing this. I've loved talking to you guys. It's been really fun to hear your relationship and your dynamic. And I mean, I've said it a few times, but Manny, you believing in Chauncey and believing in kids is making a world of difference. Chauncey, you're doing amazing things, and you're so articulate and reflective about how people and organizations made a difference in your life, and that's really special. So thanks for talking to me. Thanks for inspiring kids, both of you. And I just hope that you both keep doing what you do so well.
You're welcome. Thank you, too, for having us.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Second Stories. If you enjoyed this episode, we would be so thankful if you rated our podcast and left us a review. Be sure to also hit subscribe so you don't miss our next episode. Second Stories is created and produced by Second Story with production support from Franklin Vaughn. Second Story is a nonprofit based in Northern Virginia that works to provide safe havens and opportunities to grow and thrive to youth in crisis and their families. Learn more about what Second Story does and how you can support us at second-story.org. That's second-story.org. We hope you'll join us next time. Born with a silver spoon. Living a life that you never chose. And you know you don't deserve it, no. I seem to think you need a village. Young man, young girl, it's a crazy world, but if you take my hand, I can lead the way. The village could help you. Could help you, yeah. The village could help you. Could help you, yeah. The village could help you. Could help you, yeah. The village could help you. Born with a silver spoon. Living a life that you never chose. Young boy, young girl, it's a crazy world. If you take my hand, I can lead the way. Young boy, young girl, it's a crazy world. If you take my hand, I can lead the way. Young boy, young girl, it's a crazy world. If you take my hand, I can lead the way. The villages.
Esta